This is Kevin Conroy, the voice of Batman.
This is Will Friedle, the voice of the future Dark Knight, Batman Beyond.
And you're listening to the DCAU Review, hosted by Cal and Liam.
Streaming at DCAUReview.com and on your favorite podcast app.
In the year 2039, Gotham City has no heroes. Its people, no hope. Its youth, no future.
Evening, boys and girls, who's up for some laughs?
Terry McGinnis was part of the problem.
You can't control your temper, and you'd better if you expect to get anywhere in life.
Yeah, I'll be a big success, just like you.
Until a moment of violence brought him to the door of a man named Bruce Wayne.
Let's put a smile on his face.
Leave him alone. Once known as the Batman.
Man, you're something. You okay?
Now, the Dark Knight will rise again to drive the shadow of evil from the streets of Gotham. Let's go! Supervillains, beware! There's a new Batman in town. Batman Beyond.
You're pretty strong for some clown who thinks he's Batman.
I am Batman.
Justice returns to Gotham. Welcome to my world.
Welcome, everybody, to episode 293 of the DCAU Review. I am one of your hosts, Cal, and with me, my good friend, good brother, the man that runs our social media accounts, it's Liam. Liam, we are smack dab in the middle of the first month of the year, but it is a very important month because we are celebrating a rather large anniversary for one of our pillar DCAU shows, and we are continuing with our 25th anniversary celebration of Batman Beyond with the very next episode in production order. And as much as last week's was a memorable episode, I feel like equally this is a forgettable one.
Yeah, I think we may have some nice things to say about certain aspects of it, but it is This one's not gonna make it high on the list of best DCAU episodes or best Batman Beyond episodes, but it does play into the trope that that wreaked so much havoc on like comic books in the 50s and 60s that there was literally a rule instigated by the major publishers that only one comic could use a gorilla per month, and that is. Kids just love gorillas, man. You just put one in there. People get excited. So that's a real thing. You can look up the gorilla rule for a certain era of comics because there was like actual sales data that when you had a gorilla on your cover, the sales went up.
You see, folks, when you tune into the DCAU Review, you don't just get comedy and fun DCAU content. You also get historical facts shared with you.
That's right.
And fun facts to share with your friends. So, boy, what a fun one with that. Liam, we are reviewing the episode. We've danced around it, but the episode Speak No Evil today. And that is a season 3 Batman Beyond episode. And before we get to our breakdown of the plot synopsis here, we will, of course, get the official IMDb synopsis in just a moment. But before that, I have two reminders. The first of which is if you want to support the podcast, one of the best way to do so is to subscribe to us on your favorite podcast app. And if you subscribe to us on Apple Podcasts, I believe actually now it's following, or it's like you don't subscribe. There's like another thing that they do now. Whatever it is, that make sure that you get notified when our new episodes drop on Apple Podcasts. If you leave a 5-star review for us and leave a little blurb and live within the continental United States, we'll be sure to reach out to you and we'll have you reach out to us and we'll give you a little gift as a thank you. So don't forget, if you're listening to the pod now, stop what you're doing and go ahead and leave that review if you're listening on Apple Podcasts. Liam, before we get our IMDb synopsis, we must, of course, remind the listeners that this episode is brought to you by The Pod Tower. Head over to youtube.com/thepodtower today and subscribe. And not only will you get the entire catalog of Tim Talk episodes, which covered every single series in the DCAU, you also get the ongoing Jump on the Batwagon podcast from our friends at the Watchtower Database. And you get our entire catalog all in one convenient space for your listening pleasure right on the YouTube platform. That's youtube.com/thepodtower. Head over to today and subscribe.
That's right. So this is the synopsis for Speak No Evil, which is written by Stan Berkowitz, directed by friend of the show Dan Reba, with music by Lolita Ritmanis and animation by Coco and Dong Yang. And that synopsis reads as such. A genetically enhanced gorilla enlists Batman's help to hunt his kidnappers.
Not factually correct, I'd say.
He doesn't really enlist Batman. Batman sort of like convinces him to let him help him.
Yeah, he's like, hey, you stay here and stop wreaking havoc, and I'm going to go get your the kidnappers of your mom. Just don't do anything until I come back.
I need to look up dictionary.com to see the precise definition of enlist, mm-hmm. but that to me does not exactly describe what happens here.
So one would think that enlist would be like asking for somebody's help.
Yeah, I would. That's how I would always describe it. But either way, we will move on to our plot synopsis, and we kick things off. We see a mysterious creature. We actually see their point of view. We'll certainly talk about that in visuals, but on the run, it's not clear, but we know it's wreaking havoc and causing random women on the street to scream in terror. And we cut over to Terry, Dana, Max, and Howard, the returning Howard, thank God, is back, and they are heading into a library, which Howard, of course, a conversation that could have been had any time in like the last 20 years.
I just don't see the point.
Of a library? Come on, Howard.
It's so retro. All the information you want, you can get over the net. Books, too.
But what about the experience of holding the book in your hands? You can't get that over the net.
Did you hear a scream?
Hey, it's Gotham City. That's practically our theme song.
And it's the cops' problem anyway. Now let's go inside.
Wait, I'm hungry.
Max, we just had dinner.
So? If you were a gentleman, you'd go buy me a beefy burger. You know, pay me back for all those sodas and Frinkos I give you at lunch.
I thought they were a gift. Enough. I'll go get it. I'll see you inside.
But, asking Dana and Terry why they want to go to a physical library instead of just looking everything up online, and before they can finish that discussion, they hear the screams, and Max and Terry concoct a bit of a scheme where Terry can leave and go investigate as Batman, where we get our reveal of what exactly is causing havoc, and it's a big old gorilla, as we've alluded to already. And it's clear that the gorilla is a little bit distressed. Batman tries to calm it down, but it attacks and does not take kindly to Batman trying to subdue it, and so it runs off towards the train station. And as we notice very quickly here, this is not your run of the mill primate, as it very cautiously steps onto the tracks and then hitches a ride on the high speed rail leaving the station, avoiding Batman before he can catch them. At which point we get two professors from Gotham State University running up, and we find out that this gorilla is some sort of experimental lab animal, and that it recently broke out of its enclosure. And so Batman and the police...
And, hold up, and its name is Fingers.
That's true. That is true.
The name named by one of the professor's children, apparently.
That's right.
Fingers!
Fingers? My kids named him. That's your gorilla?
It belongs to Gotham University. We're zoologists there.
We were doing some tests on him. He went crazy, to use the technical term.
He ran away. We can't explain it.
Either of you have a phone?
I do.
Call the cops. Have them stop the train at the next platform and tell them to bring a net. A really big one.
So Fingers is on the loose, and Batman and the police concoct a little roadblock that they're going to stop the train at the next stop and capture him. But the gorilla sees the cops waiting for him and is smart enough to jump off of the tracks down into a park below and hide out in the woods. So we quickly establish that there's something going on here that Terry decides he wants to investigate it further. There's more that meets the eye. This gorilla is clearly very smart because it not only did it know not to step on the third rail and electrocute itself, but it also showed other incredible strategy and somehow realized that the train they jumped on was the only one that was preparing to leave the station. So Terry decides he's going to go investigate, and here's where we find out it's our old nemesis Splicers are back, but with a unique twist this time.
That's right. Yeah, we learn a little bit. Terry decides to investigate our two professors, and as he's exploring their laboratory, he comes upon a chemical. Just as he discovers the chemical that Bruce had suggested he look for, the professors arrive back to the laboratory, sort of pointing blame at whose fault it is that the gorilla escaped. And who will take the blame if the authorities come a calling? And Batman stops them, and he remembered he could turn invisible a lot in this episode. Mm-hmm. The invisibility, it doesn't work for him like three quarters of the episode, but he does at least try to use it multiple times. So yeah, E for effort, I suppose. But he, as he's standing there and scares the you know what out of our professors, he begins grilling them, and we learn that it's this sort of like reverse splicing, essentially. Mm-hmm. If splicing was taking animal DNA and adding it to humans, this was adding human DNA to a animal in order to see if they could increase their intelligence level and you know, become world renowned, essentially.
I never wanted to get into this in the first place.
Except you were the one who was always complaining that our money was drying up.
Maybe I complained, but this whole thing was your idea.
You went along with it.
Look, we need to figure out what to do.
Well, first thing, we have to get rid of the evidence.
I don't blame you. That stuff's illegal. It's the catalyst that splicers use when they want to play musical chairs with their DNA. But you already know that. You were using it on the gorilla, weren't you?
We weren't getting anywhere with our intelligence experiments. We were going to lose our grant.
So you figured you'd splice in a little human DNA. Raise his IQ a couple of points, maybe add a few hand signs to his vocabulary.
It was enhanced DNA. He went berserk as soon as we injected him.
We couldn't hold him.
And now we've got a gorilla on the loose. One that's real strong and real smart.
Yes, and getting smarter.
Unfortunately, of course, it made things worse as soon as the human DNA was spliced into him, they used enhanced DNA. What does that mean? I don't know. Super soldier serum, maybe? Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. Super gorilla serum? I don't know. Maybe in my headcanon, maybe they had like a superhero's DNA and injected it into him. Or maybe it was like Gorilla Grodd's DNA and it was like an enhanced primate DNA. I don't know. Either way, they used some sort of enhanced DNA. It made him crazy. He ran out and he escaped. And their concern is that this is just the beginning, because it's a progressive DNA, as we learn that Fingers will continue to increase his intelligence as time wears on. We cut next to a scene in a park where a man that looks a little bit like Dan Reba is sitting on the bench watching a newscast talking about a conservationist who happened to save a white leopard, I believe it was. Mm-hmm. And during this video, we see standing behind this gentleman enjoying a sandwich watching the news happens to be a Fingers the gorilla, who scares him, and then Fingers the gorilla scares him away, but picks up the park bench and throws it at the television, recognizing this conservationist not as the Tiger King, who I thought it might be at first first watch. Again, I haven't seen this episode in many years, so it could have been anybody, but it is in fact.
I thought it was the bad guy from Tarzan, but
oh, good call.
Disney's Tarzan, but no. Yeah,
could have been. No, it's this conservationist named James Van Dyle, also known as Van Dyle pretty much for the rest of the episode, and is actually known to our gorilla as Van Dyle as he begins to mouth the words and speak the name Van Dyle as his first words in English. Later on in the episode, we cut now to a nighttime scene as Fingers emerges onto the streets and is scaring people as he runs through Gotham. Batman catches up with him and manages to chase him through a construction site. Where else would you chase a human animal hybrid through? But as we've learned in Batman, if it ain't broke, don't fix it. You chase him through a construction site. So he chases him up this building, and they engage in a little bit of fisticuffs. It's very clear that Fingers has the upper hand with his animalistic strength, even though Terry has a physically enhanced Batman suit on, but he's no match for this gorilla. And at some point during the breakdown, Terry learns that the gorilla can talk, and they have a back and forth discussion where we kind of get the background of Fingers the gorilla, his story, you know, who he was and how he came to be, pretty much at this point, the stories of his past. As we learn, as his vendetta against Van Dyle goes back way to his childhood, as he was a young gorilla in Africa, and he was stolen away from Africa, separated from his gorilla mother by this same Van Dyle, who was viciously interested in poaching them. And at this point, as we mentioned before, Batman makes a promise to him to try and help him out, but says that he has to stay put because he can't certainly run around. And it doesn't seem that Batman fully trusts the gorilla, with good reason. I mean, he seems to be perfectly okay with the fact that the gorilla can talk, but the trust level is at an all-time low at this point for the primate. So he decides to make a deal with him, that the Fingers says that he'll give him till morning time to bring in Van Dyle, but if not, he doesn't really care anymore whether or not he's scaring people. That'll be the least of Batman's worries.
We're not all alike. If what you say is true, Van Dyle's a poacher, an outlaw. He's the one who should be behind bars.
I just want to know where he sent my mother.
But don't you want to stop him, too? Think of the other gorillas, the ones he hasn't taken yet.
You'll make him stop doing that? How?
I'm not sure yet, but I've got a better chance than you do. You can't even walk down the street without causing a panic.
Dawn, that's how long you have.
Dawn? But
if Van Dyle's not behind bars by then, I go back down there. And they can panic all they want.
So Batman goes off to investigate. He heads off to this to Van Dyle's conservationist compound, where he's got a lot of animals, clearly. Some lions are seen there amongst other animals. And as Batman notices, another baby gorilla is getting their tracking device taken off of them. We learn that this is used by real conservationists in order to track animals and their migrating patterns. Bruce is a big help here. He's pretty much the Wikipedia page for Terry throughout the episode, feeding him all the exposition that both he and I needed for the episode. But yes, the chips are being removed, which of course is a signature of poachers and is illegal. Bruce suggests that Terry contact the police, and that the commissioner would probably be interested in hearing about this. And that's where we kind of interrupt Terry's investigation here, as we see not only him as he tries to leave the compound with the evidence. Unfortunately, Van Dyle, I didn't mention before, but he's kind of got Dr. Spellbinder eye thing that can see heat signatures, we'll learn a little bit later. So even though Terry is using his invisibility, he's able to see Terry standing there, and they're able to capture him. And at this point, things aren't looking too good for Terry, because when you have a bad guy and he's got lions, you can kind of figure out what he's going to do when he catches Batman, right?
Absolutely. So, of course, what else are Van Dyle and his men going to do but lock Terry in that cage with two vicious, hungry lions? But thankfully, Fingers has gotten a little tired of waiting by then and hitches a ride on one of those police hover. What are those things called?
He gets the taxi.
Well, first he jumps off the building and gets on the police.
Oh, it's like a makeshift helicopter. It's like a whirlybird.
What is it?
It's like a futuristic gyroscope or something like that.
Sure.
I love about that though is that keeping the tradition of Gotham City Police, the police department, they're apparently the people that fly whatever vehicle, whatever 50 years from now or 50 years in the past. If they hear a loud noise or see something strange, they are taught just to mind their own business and that it must be nothing.
Absolutely. Like somehow they're able to like take on like, I don't know, how much do gorillas weigh? Like 2,000 pounds?
Yeah, probably.
Like, or 1,000 pounds or whatever. Somehow they're able to take on that much weight in this little hover car designed to carry two human men. And if doesn't really affect them, but yes, Fingers hitches a ride to the ground and hops in a taxi where there's some really funny dialogue. We'll maybe get to in voice acting between him and the taxi cab driver,
because he can talk now, so of course he can hail a cab also.
Yes, it's a great bit. And he arrives at the at Van Dyle's compound, and Barbara and the police are on their way, but of course, Bruce hasn't been able to raise Terry. It's sort of a race against time. No one knows what's going to happen. But we get Fingers the gorilla arriving just in time to save Terry from those vicious lions. And then he and Terry go to work fighting against Van Dyle and his men. Although, honestly, it looks like things are looking pretty dire. Terry is once again tased and on the defensive, and Fingers is a little bit overwhelmed, but that's when Barbara and the rest of the police arrive. She accuses Van Dyle, but they kind of point out that there's nothing specific tying Van Dyle to this other than Batman's word, which is of course when Fingers makes his grand return and begins talking in front of everyone and tells him that he'll make the case. There's a bit more of a chase and more fisticuffs where Fingers once again corners Van Dyle, asks him what happened to his mother, and Van Dyle insists that he doesn't know and that she was just another gorilla to him, something he'd done 100 times that didn't mean anything to him, so he doesn't know what happened to her.
Probably sold her.
Probably.
I don't know. I don't keep track.
She was my mother.
To me, it was just another gorilla.
No!
That's right. Kill her. It's what anybody would do. Any human.
I am not human.
Well, you're sure not a gorilla anymore.
And Fingers considers taking bloody revenge in that moment, but Terry reminds him that that's what a human would do in this situation. And Fingers decides to instead allow him to face justice and be put in a cage like Fingers and all of his family were. So begins to wrap us up. We get this one little epilogue where Terry and Bruce have flown Fingers back to Africa, first class, I hope. And as they arrive, Bruce is prepared to inject him with something that will take the human DNA out of him and also and remove his memories simultaneously. And Fingers decides he doesn't want that to happen because he wants to sort of be a protector for all of the other gorillas out there that that will be under attack from any number of poachers. So he's going out to be Gorilla Batman in the jungles of Africa and trying to right the wrongs, not let any other gorilla families go through what his family went to. And Bruce even kind of remarks that they're very much kindred spirits, he and Fingers. So
looks the same, quieter though. No, no injection.
But this will get rid of your human DNA.
You won't remember what happened.
I want to remember. I've been given a gift. I'm strong as a gorilla, but smart as a human. I'm going to use it.
How?
There'll be more poachers. There'll always be more. But now they're going to have to deal with me.
He knows who we are.
I don't think we need to worry. He's a kindred spirit, if I've ever seen one.
That's kind of where we end our episode, with Fingers the Gorilla, a super smart talking gorilla in Africa, where there's a whole city of them, but, you know, we didn't know that yet at the time. Mm-hmm. And he's going to go off and protect the jungles from poachers, and Bruce and Terry go back home. So that's where we end our episode this week.
A silent defender, a dark gorilla. Yeah. I'm going to give this episode, there'll be some higher marks in this episode, mm-hmm. But it will not be from plot. This is a ridiculous episode. I don't know who decided this episode. Like, I don't know who decided this episode should be the episode that they air. Like, I'd be very, very interested in the brainstorming, or if this was just bottom of the barrel. Like, Mr. Berkowitz, we know, who's responsible for, you know, credited with writing the episode. We know he can write great episodes, so it's not condemnation of his writing ability. But this mm-hmm. episode just feels like it should have been a comic book. Like, it should have been a Batman Beyond comic book. It does not feel like the time and effort that went into it would warrant it to be a, like, this, the story would warrant being a 22 minute cartoon. I don't know. It's just very, it's goofy, but it's played ultra serious. It's not played goofy. It's not comedic. It's not, there's no underlying comedy other than the spot where the gorilla takes the taxi cab. Like, there's just not enough comedy in it for me. Mm-hmm. And I didn't feel there's like a, yes, the poacher is bad, mm-hmm. but we don't get, like, I didn't feel like, other than the separation of the animals, like if this was Kraven the Hunter or something, and he's got, like, I don't know, animal carcasses all over the place, and he's like a trophy hunter, and like I would feel a little bit more like sympathetic to the gorilla, to Fingers, but I could not get any sort of sympathy or empathy out of it, other than the, oh no, the sad drawing of the gorilla lost the sad drawing of his mom, like, halfway through the episode.
Well, couldn't we say that about, like, Bruce Wayne's parents getting shot?
Of course. But that's also a personification of a human being. I just, it's sure. You're already asking me to suspend disbelief of, like, the sad talking gorilla. And then his motivation is not to get revenge on, like, the people that made him a talking gorilla. It's the guy that separated from his mom. It just doesn't feel like it followed a path that I would have followed. I think it would have been far more interesting if it's like, hey, I don't want to be a talking gorilla. I didn't ask to be a talking gorilla. Here I am in this testing facility with all of these scientists testing on me all the time. I want to exact revenge on them. And then we learn that their motivations are less than above board for whatever they're testing. Like, that could be a story and more interesting to me. I wasn't able to come up with, like, a true sympathetic feeling other than like, oh man, it's sad that he got separated from his mom. But the truth is that kind of happens every day in the animal kingdom. So it's like, I don't necessarily feel so much for that. I don't know. That's kind of where I was like, that plus, yeah, that plus the final scene of Batman, Bruce dubbing him a kindred spirit so he could be Gorilla Batman.
I like that. I like that. You're absolutely right. This is a comic. This feels, other than it being a Batman Beyond story, this feels like such a 1960s detective comics issue.
Absolutely.
Like, absolutely. Like you know, like early 60s, even before like kind of the, you know, the Renaissance as you know, they kind of aged him up and changed some things as they went forward towards the end of that decade. But it's, yes, it's very wacky. It feels very Silver Age. It is interesting that they introduced these two scientists who did the thing to him, mm-hmm. who made him human and thus gave him these emotions and this plight and experimented on him. But they kind of just let them off the hook. And I mean, I guess maybe Terry gets them arrested. We don't see that, but and then we introduce another villain at like the end of the first act with this very sort of one dimensional poacher guy. My first thought is, why wasn't this just the Stalker?
Right.
That's we have a guy. We right. have a big game hunter guy.
Right. Yeah. I also would have rather have seen the return of the Stalker.
Whose whole thing was like, I stopped hunting animals because it wasn't challenging anymore. It's like, okay, well now there's a gorilla who's as smart as a man. That seems pretty challenging to a guy like the Stalker.
Right.
So that to me would have been, I guess the last time we saw the Stalker, he had kind of, he was like, whatever. He was working with the government to stop False Face or whatever. So maybe the idea is he was kind of a anti-hero now instead of a straight up villain, and they didn't want to bring him back as just a straight antagonist again. But it just feels weird when you like, you already have one of these guys and you just bring in a new one who is less interesting. Certainly from a visual standpoint, he's less interesting, as we'll talk about. But yeah, overall, like I said, I kind of fell in love with this for its simplicity and for the fact that Batman and like Terry and Bruce are empathizing with this gorilla because his mom got stolen and possibly killed as a child, and now as an adult he's coming back to seek justice. Like, that's so silly and so fun to me as a concept. So I enjoy this. I would liken it to the recent Aquaman film that just recently came out in December of last year, if you're listening to this on its original air date, in that I would never probably, well, I'm getting ahead of myself to rewatchability, I would just say it feels like you just picked up a random issue of a comic, or perhaps you opened the wonderful DC Universe app and just hit like a randomizer and picked a random issue of a Batman comic. And it just happened to be this wacky one where he meets a talking gorilla who's hunting down the poacher who killed his mom. And he is deputized by Batman at the end to be the protector of the jungles of Africa. Like, it's so silly and so wacky, but because of that, that's kind of why I liked it, even though it maybe wouldn't be an episode I would ever go back to after we're done reviewing it this week. But for all those reasons, I ended up giving Plot a 6 out of 10. I had a lot of fun with this.
Not enough of a disparity for the disagreement alarm, but I went with a 4 out of 10.
Okay.
I did not like this episode. I was teetering on a 3. really, really was. But I think there's enough that we'll like in the other categories that will more than make up for that. But I just don't know how this got past the pitch phase. Like, how did this get past the pitch phase where we reverse splice human DNA? Like, I feel like that was the pitch. Like, what would happen if we know splicers are humans with animal DNA. What if we reverse spliced an animal? And then what would that animal say? Well, if it's a gorilla, he'd be mad that his parents got taken away from him. Great. Perfect.
Like, well, that even would be kind of like, if there was like a bunch of these, if there was like a, you know, a leopard lady and a, you know, a lizard man and whatever, and there are all these like reverse animals with human brains now that are running around Gotham.
Right.
And you know, some of them want to kill the humans that did this to them, and then maybe Fingers is the one that, you know, stands up and wants them to see justice for whatever reason, because he's Batman but a gorilla.
Fail ape.
Right, he's oh man, could start a whole group. But yes, I hope that's another question. Do you think Solovar, who I don't know how long gorillas in Gorilla City live, do you uh-huh. think Solovar would welcome Fingers into Gorilla City, or would he be like
an outcast,
like a second class citizen, since he didn't naturally become a talking gorilla,
genetically enhanced?
Yeah,
I would say that
he juiced to become a human.
He would be no, I'd like to think Solovar would accept him. I don't know if the rest of them would. It might be hard to get everybody else in gorillas.
Probably not that one that only has the one eye that.
Yep, he has
tried to kidnap everybody.
Yeah, he's not a fan. I don't think he would go for it. But yeah, I'd say Solovar would, or maybe if it's Solovar's offspring at this point. I don't know how many more years Solovar had under him, but
sure. See how I just don't understand how you can dislike an episode's plot when we get to conversations like, would Solovar like this talking gorilla, or would he be ostracized from Gorilla City? Like, how can an episode that brought us to this conversation not be great? I just don't get it.
Tough but fair. All right, let's move on to our next category, Liam, which is going to be animation and visuals. And I believe you said that was a Coco Dong Yang responsible mm-hmm. this week, once again, for our visuals and animation. And for an episode that deals with a gorilla and Batman, other than their one major fight, there's not a whole lot of fisticuffs that occurs other than that fight and then the final fight. There's a lot of running around, but there's plenty of stuff to enjoy. First of all, I guess we can start with Fingers the gorilla, who I love the design. It's very much in the vein of the DCAU gorillas of the, I guess, that came after him technically, but we're right. technically on the timeline before him. But I believe that the DCAU wiki credits the designed to Tommy Tejeda mm-hmm. with Glenn Wong doing some cleanups on there. You can check out the DCAU wiki and maybe our Twitter this week, or X, if you will. Check out the designs for that, as they're also available on the DCAU wiki, the pre-production designs and turnarounds. But yeah, very, I liked the way that Fingers looked, very imposing, moves like a gorilla, mm-hmm. walks like a gorilla. Talks like a gorilla. I mean, it's I'm not somebody that works in animation, and I don't know the difficulty level of a gorilla versus, say, a giraffe or something like that. But I guess maybe with having similar human features, it's a little bit of the same. But there's enough differences that you have to be able to make sure that you nail it. Otherwise it will look like a human being. And I think that they crushed it for the entire episode. He moves, he walks on his hands, you know, the way he's climbing and running. And I love the way when he gets in the taxi cab lowers down because of the weight, mm-hmm. The way he jumps and hangs on the train and the, whatever the police air thing is, all of that, climbing up the side of the buildings, lots of like King Kong inspired stuff, with the way that he's hanging on the side of buildings and looking around and swinging, and all looks great. I thought Fingers the gorilla, the design, him being mostly dark, like very very dark fur, and then, you know, the patches where he doesn't have fur, very very sort of grayish, also look very cool, especially juxtaposed against Batman and his own gray and black suit and with a dash of red. But I liked Fingers' design. What about you?
Yeah, I really like it. I really like his eyes. He's just got these like jet black eyes, just this tiny little speck of white, which I think if you look at these gorillas in nature, that's kind of how they look. They don't have a lot of detail in their eyes, or at least you can't see it because of all the fur. So I kind of like that as a point of difference compared to, as we've just been talking about, the gorillas, the other talking gorillas we saw later on in Justice League. So I like that as kind of a point of difference. He's very wide And I liked a lot of his movements and stuff when he is fighting. Like he kind of is still in that sort of all fours running, you know, running with his knuckles on the ground sort of thing. They do some pretty good creative stuff with his movement, which I enjoyed a lot. And then I do like the Van Dial Deadshot eye thing, mm-hmm. that he has that lets him see. I guess it's just heat signatures or whatever. It's vague, but it allows him to see Batman when he's invisible at one point, and allows him to see fingers when he's hiding in the woods at one point. And we see some kind of cool POV shots of hit what he's seeing, and then they kind of do these cool reverse POVs where it's a close up of his face, and then you'll just see like the vague reflection of whatever he's looking at in his eye, which I think is really neat as well. And then I really appreciated the shot where the lions are kind of going to lunge at Batman, and Fingers just grabs them by the scruff at the last second. I think that's timed really well from an animation standpoint. I think a lot of designs, and the baby gorillas are very cute too. I believe those are also Glen Wong designed, but they convey that sequence. It does feel a little bit like straight out of a Disney movie. A certain era of Disney where the babies are in the tree watching their mom get grabbed and tied in a net and everything. Like, it is very I could see that being distressing. I assume I've seen this episode at least once, but coming into this, I did not, other than maybe Van Dial's eye thing, I really didn't remember anything about this episode. But I can imagine, as if I had seen this as a kid, that sequence would have been very distressing for me, watching the baby gorillas get snagged and put in a trash bag while their mom is in the net. That I could see this being very, very distressing in the way that that certain era of Disney was famous for trying to traumatize everyone's children by showing the parent animal in peril. So I think that sequence is pretty effective in that way as well.
No, it was. I think my only critique, something that I didn't care for, something that stood out to me sort of as a negative was, famously, I think the DCAU shows do a great job of hiding the violence that they could not show. And there was one trick that they did that I really liked, but I felt like the other way that they tried to hide it wasn't quite as effective. But as soon as Batman is thrown into the lion's cage, I think my guess is that they were told by S&P that they couldn't show animals trying to rip Batman apart viciously. Mm-hmm. So they kind of cut away from him, and they show the group of the guys just kind of standing there, and it's sort of an extended, it's a weird extended look, and then they kind of cut around to the side of the cage where Fingers is breaking in. But then they there's an, I think in that same sequence, they either cut to just above the cage, and you kind of see Batman's shadow kind of moving back and forth with the shadows of the lions there. And that added a little bit more to it than the cutaway. So I wish that it just felt like a very extended sequence too. Usually those are pretty quick, so that you get in and get out, and they kind of mask the violence without making it clear that that's what they're doing. This felt very much like they were masking the violence with an extended sequence. So, but the rest of the episode, I think it looks beautiful. It moves beautiful, as we already talked about, animating an animal for one of your co-stars for the entire episode, is probably not very easy. I love the POV shot at the beginning that we talked about, seeing from Fingers' perspective, and you get the sort of the outline of the eye as you're kind of looking around, and then the reveal that it's a gorilla is the reflection in the glass. I thought that was a really, really neat way of doing that. And kind of revealing that you're not just, cause all you hear is this breathing. So you don't know, you assume your mind goes to it that it's a human, but of course the reveal is that it's a gorilla. So, I love that, but the skies look beautiful. They're purple, and you get a lot of dark hues cause everything takes place at night for the episode, except for the one sequence with the guy that looks like Dan Reba who gets scared. And, Even the sky there is sort of a reddish orange, and everything looks great. I think we'd be remiss not to mention, of course, there's also a couple of cameos. I did note the old Gotham State University arch that was featured in the Batman the Animated Series. Managed 50 years later, it still looks pretty good. From whenever now is, it still looks like it's they've either done some restoration to it, or it was made out of one of the, you know, made out of something that was built to stand for a long time, because it doesn't look that different than when we saw it in BTOS. And then also the Gotham Studios logo, which of course looks very similar to the Warner Brothers logo. That's one of the places that the gorilla, he climbs on the side of a water tower with the Gotham Studios logo on it. So, of course, the very famous Warner Brothers water tower, definitely an homage to that. But yeah, looks beautiful. Everybody moves beautiful. The heat signature POV also from Van Dyle's eyes is awesome, as you mentioned. So yeah, I loved all of it. It's a really strong, good looking episode, and I feel like picks up maybe from in a couple places that maybe I didn't care for the plot. So I ended up giving it a pretty strong 8 out of 10. What about you?
Yeah, I give it the exact same score. I think it is very strong, and I think my favorite part is just the way Fingers moves, and he's very you know, his mannerisms and how he fights and everything is very is really cool. And that design as a whole is awesome. So yeah, big thumbs up for that.
Absolutely. All right, Liam, let's move on to our next category, which is going to be music. And as you mentioned at the top, that's going to be done by the great Lolita Ritmanis. I will say, not a ton of pieces that I had stood out, other than maybe the sequence with the tragic origins of Fingers the gorilla. As you mentioned, the music with that is pretty haunting as he gets torn away from his mom. Batman versus the lions has some good backing fare to it. Also, Batman chasing Fingers both through the city, up the building, and on the train had a couple of good pieces. But I didn't think there was anything that stood out as a piece that really leapt out at me compared to, I think, what a lot of the visuals looked like. Did you have any pieces that stood out to you?
The one I noticed, there's some sort of a, I don't know what you would call that, like sort of tribal style music when, especially when Fingers is moving through the city towards the end when he's trying to make his way to save Terry. They sort of bring in a lot of like conga drums, and there's some sort of chanting that they put in there with some sort of choir as well. And I think that's really a fun sequence. There's some, if we didn't mention it, there's feels definitely like there's a little bit of you know, as one might expect in an episode with the gorilla, there's a little bit of King Kong homage with him climbing over the buildings and the big tower in the city and everything. So and that I thought that sort of jungle music sort of added to that in a fun way. And I did note the fight music during that final battle in the conservation is, I thought, really, really strong as well. And I think the music during the flashback is a little bit is, like I said, it really adds to that that harrowing scene of the baby gorillas. So yeah, for all those reasons, I ended up giving music a pretty solid 7 out of 10.
I just went 1 point lower with a 6 out of 10. Agree with everything that you said. There's, again, we talk about it every time we do music. That's not it's definitely not condemnation for the music. It's good. It's great. Also, as we talked about that Warner Brothers and our dynamic music partners are starting to get some of the music released so that you can kind of hear some of these pieces in isolation. So hopefully they continue to do that, so these pieces can be appreciated by a lot of people. And, you know, each and every episode's music can be broken down a little bit more easily. All right, Liam, let's move on to our final category of the day, which is going to be our voice acting. We have some interesting connections here in the DCAU with some of our cast, as well as just some general renowned actors involved with this week, along with our normal cast of characters. Let's talk about this week's voice cast.
That's right. So we have playing Fingers the Gorilla. We have Malachi Throne is his name. Probably would best be known as far as his live action work would go. He was in a few episodes of Star Trek, as well as the Leo DiCaprio movie Catch Me If You Can. Great. I think he's really like as far as like what you might expect a gorilla who is just learning to talk to sound. I think he does a really solid job. He is very sort of understated and monotone. You mentioned there's kind of some fun comedy with him when the taxi driver picks him up and he's like, "Well, don't you get hot in that costume?" And he just goes, "You get used to it." And then they like it's so dry. Like almost everything he says is very dry. And even when he's recounting his the harrowing story of his mother and everything and his want for revenge. They kind of allow like the roars and the gorilla sounds to be his emotion. And so they let Mr. Throne's performance kind of just be this very kind of understated. But I didn't feel it was one note or one note in a bad way. It just felt like, okay, this is a new motor skill for him. He's still kind of figuring out like what he can do and the sounds he can make with his with his voice. So I really enjoyed his performance as Fingers the Gorilla.
Hit not his last DCAU appearance, as he also voices Harvey Dent's alter ego, the Judge, later on in the DCAU. But yeah, for this, I mean, I imagine there's some sort of a modulation effect that they put on his voice to at least maybe deepen it. Also, by the way, the DCAU wiki wants to remind you that he also played False Face in Batman. I guess that's Batman 66, the television show. So, multiple connections here for Mr. Throne. But yeah, he does a great job. I think his performance, being a gorilla, of voicing a gorilla is certainly something that multiple people have had the opportunity to do so in the DCAU. And I think that I would put this as a compliment in that you have Grodd, who's like an accident come to life. You have Ultra Humanite, who it's never quite fully explained why he looks like a gorilla, and speaks like a gorilla, or I mean, speaks like a human with a British accent. You also, of course, have the rest of the cast from Gorilla City, but well, I don't know why I said that Grodd was a human accident come to life. He's from Gorilla City. He's a talking gorilla from the city of talking gorillas. But yeah, you have the whole rest of the cast of Gorilla City also. This would be the one that I would dub most gorilla-like, I would say. Like it sounds animalistic in a way. Like it's a that's as a compliment. Like which makes sense also because this is a actual gorilla that has DNA infused into him that allows him to speak like a human. So, great job from Mr. Throne with his Fingers voice. Also, Fingers, who decided that the gorilla's name was going to be Fingers? I'm just glad. I'm just sad that we were robbed of a Terry McGinnis slash Batman yelling out Fingers, no, because I don't think he actually ever addresses him as Fingers.
Sadly, no, I don't believe he does. Really missed big missed opportunity here, but
Or Bruce wishing him fare thee well. Fare thee well,
that's
Fingers.
right.
You're the
You've heard it
gorilla
here,
Batman.
people. Fingers. that's a good bit. Elsewhere in our voice cast, we're not topping that, but we do have a we have a Rainer Schoene, I believe, a Schoen, German actor. Actually, if you look up his, he's got a lot of German television credits, though you might also know him from things like Babylon 5 or Return to Treasure Island. And
A
apparently, yeah,
recognizable character actor face for sure.
absolutely. And apparently, he also, Is that right?
He speaks German.
He does. Oh, sorry, I'm reading this live on the air, unprofessionally. He does. He also does the voice a lot of German movie dubs for American movies, including Darth Vader in Revenge of the Sith.
So if
And
you've ever watched Revenge of the Sith, episode 3, Revenge of the Sith, with the German overdubs, you mm-hmm. have heard this gentleman it's voice before.
That's right. I do think he's got you know, he's got that layer of slime to him, and he's sort of just a vaguely European ethnic bad guy, but not necessarily like he's not doing, like, you know, Dr. Jones, we have way. It's like he's not doing that over the top German stereotype.
It's a nondescript like Eastern European accent, but not like Russian. It's definitely more on the German side.
For sure. Yeah. I think he does a solid job. Like I said, the character is very, very one dimensional. He's just an evil poacher. And I think maybe he gets a little bit to do with when he's going back and forth with Mr. Throne in that last scene where Figgers is trying to find out what happened to his mom. And he's just sort of panicked and you know, shouting that she didn't mean anything to him. He doesn't know what happened to her. I think he does a good job there.
Yeah, that was solid. I think that's truly the maybe the only part of the episode that he had to show a lot of emotion. He's sort of overconfident when Batman is in the lion cage, but you know, it's not requiring much emotion as far as showing that he's, you know, showing that he's upset like he is, or as he's being choked out by the gorilla at the end. So yeah, I think in that scene, that's certainly the highlight of the episode for sure.
Absolutely. And then just rounding out our cast, we have some of our more regularly featured guest stars. We do have briefly Max Brooks returning as Howard Groot.
Heck yeah.
Love seeing that guy. Love hearing that guy's voice. Wish he showed up 10 more times. We do, of course, briefly have Cree Summer as Max and Lauren Tom as Dana.
He deserves better, a better boyfriend.
25 years later, and it's no less true than it was when we first said it on this show.
He lies to go off and stop a gorilla. Don't forget. But I guess the redeeming factor is he does mention that he has to get back to her before investigating the gorilla, right?
He at least made some brief contact. He didn't just blow her off completely for once. But yes, that will bring us to our main actors. We do briefly, and I do mean briefly, have Kevin Conroy as Bruce Wayne. Mostly he's just there to give either exposition or just kind of generically react to whatever Will Friedle as Terry McGinnis and Batman are saying, or to give us like a fun fact. He's like, well, gorillas are smarter than you would think. Oh, gorillas don't eat meat. but again, all worth it for that final scene in Africa where Will Friedle as Terry is like, gee, I don't know, Bruce, he knows who we are. And, you know, he's got all this knowledge of the human world. And Bruce is like, it's okay. I trust him. He just like me for real. He doesn't say that literally, but that is the gist of the scene. And I love that we got a bit of audio. You know, last week we had like a tour de force, perfect voice acting demo reel from Kevin Conroy with all he got to do in Out of the Past. And this week we just got a little snippet of him talking about how much mutual respect he has for a talking gorilla. And I think that's just wonderful. The man had range, to say the least. So it's a lot of Bruce and Terry just reacting to kind of the ridiculousness of the scene, but some good stuff still. If you some fun little nuggets in there as well.
I would dare say that they could have been even more like reactionary. Bruce, we understand timeline wise at this point, he's ran into multiple talking gorillas. He understands
and
at this point
and was briefly turned into a gorilla himself.
Correct. This is old hat. Like this isn't very interesting to him. So I feel like Terry could have shown a little bit more. Could have been written to be a little bit more, you know, freaked out by this. But again, we're three seasons into it, so maybe he too has seen enough to know that anything is possible. But it's truly Kevin Conroy doing a lot of exposition to catch readers up, or or watchers up on the on what's going on and what to know about. Like I said, like basically reading the article, the Wikipedia article about gorillas, and then it's Terry talking a lot to the gorilla, trying to calm him down and talking back to Bruce about everything that he's seeing. So yeah, not a lot of a lot is asked of them. It's a lot of exposition, a lot of reactionary stuff. So not a lot of opportunity for them to show a whole bunch of range, but that doesn't mean that they did a bad job, of course, because they could probably read the phone book and we'd be happy. Folks, the phone book used to be a actual physical book that contained a lot of publicly available phone numbers. That's right. You could look a person up in the phone book if they were listed and just dial them. Their name was listed there and everything. It was crazy. I just dated us. Sorry. Anyway, based on...
Look, there's a library in this episode. And true. This is set in...
I was going to say that...
50 years from now.
That that one comment that they make about physically holding the book, I thought was... Even if it wasn't mentioned at the time, I don't know how prevalent digital comic books were in the year 2000. Right. But it's at least a retroactive Easter egg where Dana says, "What about holding the book in your fingers, mm-hmm. you know, or in your hands?" Like, you know, it's a different feeling. I wholeheartedly agree. Like, while we are humongous fans of the DC Infinite app, it's a wonderful application.
It sure is.
You can catch all of your favorite comic books all in one place, convenient to your phone. It's not the same as cracking open a comic book. It's not the same feel, smell, sensation as holding the book in your hand. So co-sign what Dana says in this, especially when it comes to comic books.
Absolutely.
So for all those reasons, Liam, now that I've gotten off my soapbox about that line, I ended up giving voice acting a pretty solid 7 out of 10 for this week. I thought everybody did a good job. I just didn't think that there was anything terribly great or outstanding about anybody's performance that warranted a higher score. What about you?
Yeah, I gave it the exact same score once again of 7 out of 10. I think everybody is good. Nobody is necessarily great, but everybody is good in this episode. And considering how much of the episode is asked to be carried by guest stars, I think that can always be a mixed bag. So a good, solid job by all involved.
Absolutely. All right, Liam. Well, that will begin to wrap things up here as we total up our scores. I end up with a middle of the road, 20 out of 40. Or sorry, 20. I end up with a middle of the road 25 out of 40. What about you?
Yeah, and I'm a few points higher this week at a 28 out of 40. So not a huge disparagement in our scores. But as far as rewatchability goes, no. This is a very easy skip, unfortunately. Like I said, it's a fun, wacky little episode that, like I said, it evokes to me like picking up, like finding like in a dollar bin at your local comic store, finding just a random issue of a Batman comic and reading it and not really understanding what's going on or having this really wacky plot and just enjoying yourself in that way. So I think there's some fun to be had, but as far as do you ever need to watch this again if you've seen it once? That is a hearty and definitive no, I would say.
I was going to say, I think the ringing endorsement could be that you said last week and then this week, you've at least seen this one time, but you've completely forgotten it. And after this, you may forget it again that you saw this episode. Although the times that we've had laughing about Bruce knighting a gorilla as the Dark Knight of the Jungle or whatever is pretty memorable. So we'll always have that.
Given him a cowl. I think there is
sewing him together a bat cowl.
He uses like a watermelon to judge the head size and sews him a cowl. I think there is literally a Brave and the Bold episode where there's a gorilla and a bat cowl. So that might be what I'm thinking.
Has to be. All right, Liam. Well, let's begin to wrap things up this week. Thank you, everybody, for tuning in. Don't forget, we would love your support for the podcast, and there are multiple ways to do so. We'll run through those very quickly here. The first of which, of course, is subscribing on your favorite podcast app and leaving a 5-star review. It lets you leave a little blurb as an option, as a part of your review, as it does on Apple Podcasts. We would love to thank you for that. Leave a 5-star review. And if you live in the continental United States, we'll send you a little gift if you contact us once we read it on the air. And you can also, of course, interact with us on Spotify. If you listen to us there, there's a weekly poll and a question of the week that you can respond to. Check that out. We thank our monthly monetarily supporters that do so, giving of their hard-earned dollars each and every week, or each and every month. They give us a couple of dollars to say thank you, support us, help the podcast going, keep us enjoying the late nights of editing podcasts when I'm struggling to remember what it's all about. Thank you to our monthly supporters for doing so. You can also join them if you want to by checking out the show notes. In the show notes, you will also find a link to our store where you can get yourself a piece of merchandise. Liam, we sold a Jimmy DeBoss mug this week. Thank you for plugging it on X. That's one of our top selling merchandise items on our merchandise store. So check that out if you're interested in seeing what other type of hilarious DCAU tie-in merchandise we have. Check that out. You can also, of course,
would you buy some sort of Batman fingers? The gorilla is Batman of Africa. Sure. If we could come up with a design, please let us know, because
please make me Photoshop fingers, the gorilla in a Batman suit. I would love to work on a design. Even if one person bought the shirt, it would be worth it to me. Yes, you can also, of course, follow us on social media, where Liam tweeted about his Jimmy DeBoss mug earlier this mm-hmm. month, on the website formerly known as Twitter, now known sometimes as X, at DCAU Review, and of course on Instagram at DCAU Review. You can also follow us on Facebook, but that's an exercise of futility for a lot of people, because we don't really post stuff on there other than our Instagram posts, I guess, still go there too. So if you for some reason are on Facebook and not Instagram, you can check out our Instagram posts there. So Liam, we will be continuing with our month-long celebration of the 25th anniversary of Batman Beyond debuting here in the States with one of our character spotlight episodes next week. But I guess we should change the title from character spotlight to characters spotlight for this upcoming one, shouldn't we?
That's right. Usually give just one character. I guess we did include the Green Lantern Corps in our Green Lantern character spotlight. So not entirely unprecedented, but yes, usually these character spotlight episodes just focus on one character from the DCAU's appearances throughout the various series. But since, unfortunately for the world, as we have lamented several times over the years, there's a real lack of toys and other like merchandise of Batman Beyond's villains, somewhat remedied in the last couple of years by the current McFarlane lines, but even those aren't really based on the cartoon necessarily. So we're going to pair a couple of villains to talk about, and we are going to next week, as we continue to celebrate 25 years of Batman Beyond, look at the pair of female femme fatales, if you will. I think you would just say femme fatales, not female femme fatales. That's redundant. the femme fatales known as Ink and Curare. So we'll be looking at both of them next week in a special double-sized character spotlight episode.
That's awesome. We're going to go deep into the archives. We're going to find all of the Warner Brothers Studio Store exclusives featuring, maybe it's like a greeting card featuring Curare or something. We're going to find all of the tie-in merchandise. We're also going to break down, of course, their appearances on the show and talk a little bit about some tie-in comics too, amongst other things. So it'll be a fun time for us to talk about, and can't wait to revisit that with you next week, Liam. But until then, I'm Cal.
And I'm Liam.
And we'll talk to you on the next episode of the DCAU Review.
Fare thee well, fingers the gorilla.
We hardly knew the